This is a podcast from Minute Media. Derek
Jeter! This is the Yanks Go Yard podcast with Adam Weinrib and Thomas Carinante.
Welcome to a Wednesday shorty edition of the Yanks Go Yard podcast. I'm Adam Weinrib alongside Thomas Carinante. We couldn't not give you an emergency pod. First of all, got to keep up that cadence, three pods a week. We don't want to disappoint you. Second of all, Gerrit Cole. Injury. It's the only thing we haven't had yet, really, in this House of Horrors 10-day stretch following a 2.5-week, 13-game win streak. Only the 2021 Yankees would immediately go 2-8 following that stretch. And Gerrit Cole left the game on Tuesday in the fourth inning with some sort of injury. A bunch of Twitter doctors did their thing, including David Cohn and Michael Kay in the booth. Noticed Cole briefly glanced at his hand before leaving, said it was blisters. It's not blisters. Obviously, looking at your hand is sort of something you do in shame. Injury had nothing to do with that. It's hamstring tightness. It's precautionary. Cole thinks he might be able to make his next start, might not be able to. I'm going to go ahead and say he's not going to be able to. But regardless, the news could have been much, much worse. And I never, ever want to go back to that 30-minute spiral where I was like so serenely calm thinking that Gerrit Cole had suffered some sort of catastrophic arm injury that I just sort of went into a fugue state. I think I punched a shower curtain, which if you're going to punch something is the most punchable possible item. But before we get too negative, I'm going to throw it to Thomas Carinante in a second. Today is also Derek Jeter's much delayed Hall of Fame induction ceremony. Didn't quite get unanimous. Mariano Rivera did. Jeter didn't. People are very, very upset that Derek Jeter exists. So we're going to take a little time to reminisce about our favorite Jeter memories. And of course, cover the haters who are absolutely beside themselves in their diapers today on this very special day. Screwing themselves into knots about an extremely obvious Hall of Famer named Derek Jeter, who is one of the most iconic baseball players to ever play the game of baseball. Thomas Carinante, the highs and lows. Welcome to the pod. How you doing on this beautiful Wednesday where we originally said the Yankees got to win two out of these four. And then after they lost the first two out of the next three, now they've lost the second and don't have Gerrit Cole for either the third or fourth. I guess you just got to win one and try to be 2.5 up on Toronto when they leave. But also in reality, this team sucks.
Yeah. Back to what we've been talking about for the first 4 months of the season. Very great that we're deciding to bring up Luis Gil now after he hasn't pitched since August 17th for the big league club.
Welcome, welcome, welcome.
We're going to give more starts to Andrew Heaney between August 17th and now, instead of just bringing up the guy who tossed three scoreless innings in his first three MLB appearances and made history. Once again, all I want is an explanation. All I want is for some of it to make sense. It doesn't make sense. The offensive setbacks don't make sense. The decision-making continues to not make sense. If we have any bit of good news, the Rays and the White Sox are doing us favors. We were kind of worried about the White Sox going into that series with the A's because they have a ton of injuries to their starting rotation. However, they got the win last night, and the Rays are just pummeling the Red Sox into the dirt. And if you're rooting for the Red Sox at any point in the season, fuck you, whoever you are.
How are you guys doing today? Now the Yankees are 9.5 back in the Rays. You still and a half game separated from the Red Sox. You guys still rooting for the Red Sox go topple the Rays, get a season altering victory? Is that still something you guys are looking at?
It's just crazy because these fans who root for the Red Sox are the ones who talk about variance and regression. And the Yankees are in the midst of a 13-game win streak, and you think that there's not going to be any variance at any point where they're going to just not keep winning fucking games by getting every bounce and by getting timely hits, which is something they hadn't been able to do for the first 4 months. It's just your existence is the embodiment of a catch-22. Just doesn't make any sense. The Yankees should get one of these games. And at that point, I mean, that's all they need at this point to stop the bleeding, because they just need to, the good news is that they've just stayed ahead in the wild card. And that's all we've needed them to do. They're not winning this division. It's been unrealistic for quite some time now. You just have to accept the fact that the Rays are probably the second best team in baseball.
Best
team in the American League by far. They're 7 up on the Astros. They're 8 up on the White Sox, and those are supposed to be the best teams. As long as the Yankees can hold, serve, and get this home wild card game, I think that's all anybody will care about. They're 2 up on Boston in the loss column. But the Blue Jays are gaining ground after these last two nights, two games back of the wild card spot. And actually the Astros did us a favor last night by beating, they beat the Mariners, right?
Yeah, they did.
Yeah, they came back in the bottom of the ninth. Yeah, he hit a two-run homer to tie it in the bottom of the ninth, and then they won in extras. So now that kicks Seattle back to three games back, and Oakland's 3.5 games back. So, I mean, if the Yankees are going to lose, you have to look at the other circumstances and see how it benefits them. Right now, they have gotten lucky in other areas, but I mean, guys, you simply have to win and score runs. 15 runs in their last five games, and that's inflated by the 7-run performance against the Orioles on Sunday. It's unacceptable. We're back to being frustrated and calling the performance unacceptable, because it is unacceptable. They're not facing any caliber of starting pitcher that is supposed to shut them down. They're just not doing anything of note. It's bad at bats. It's bad awareness. I mean, they did have bad luck last night. How many times did they hit to the warning track? But just hit one over the fence. How many days do we have to, they haven't had extra base hits since Sunday in the sixth inning.
Yeah.
Come on.
Is that good? I mean, the crazy part about Tuesday's game is Gerrit Cole injured in the fourth inning, doesn't have his best stuff. You can't figure out what it is. Can't command the curveball. What have you, whatever. Albert Abreu gets out of that jam and it's 3-1. The problem is the offense, they don't score again. It doesn't matter if Gerrit Cole stays in the game. If Gerrit Cole gives up more than one run, they lose that game. Like, and theoretically, you know what? Do I want Gerrit Cole to be a fire-breathing ace every time he steps to the mound and throw eight shutout in that game? Sure. Then you're still calling out Aroldis Chapman to protect a 1-0 lead because this team can't hit. Again, all of a sudden, they can't hit. They even benched Joey Gallo yesterday, who's been the biggest problem. Hopefully he reemerges on Wednesday and doesn't hit in the two spot. That'd be nice because he struggles there. Be cool to see Aaron Judge, Rizzo leading off maybe. Anything to keep DJ LeMahieu out of a double play spot, because, oh my God, first off, the Yankees should have given DJ LeMahieu a blank check this offseason anyway, because money is endless and they can give everyone a blank check and who cares. But that fan service signing has turned out not terrible, because at worst, DJ LeMahieu is a competent contributor, but he's not an MVP. And when he's not an MVP, that downgrades the overall quality of this roster, because Gleyber Torres has regressed. Gio Urshela has regressed. The juice ball helped all three of those players immensely, even though LeMahieu was also really, really good in 2020. But without LeMahieu, they had LeMahieu and Voit as MVP candidates in the shortened 2020 and were barely a playoff team. So with LeMahieu as a below average hitter and solid B-minus contributor who hits into way too many double plays, and with Voit as somebody who ends up on the bench for three games before playing once, this just is not the same baseball team. We're back into, after the 13-game win streak, we are right back into wholesale changes are necessary mode, which is just an awesome place to be in. It's wild they lost Cole when they did, and that didn't end up being the narrative from that game. Instead, it was getting owned by Steven Matz and being held to singles and rarely rallying, to be honest. There were not a lot of opportunities. When Cole went down, where was your panic meter at? Because I honestly am not kidding. I think the Orioles, I was divorced from Yankee reality for a couple weeks earlier this season when Chapman blew the 4-run lead to the Angels. I've said this many times. It was like a 15-day period before I was back, like until the end of the Astros series. Mm-hmm. Like when they'd win, I'd go, what the heck? Very nice. And when they lose, I go, yep, okay, great. I'm right back there again after the Orioles game on Sunday, which was an absolute must win. They allowed the Orioles to come back and score every time they scored, over and over and over again, which is what bad and losing teams do. And once they did that, I was like, you know what? It's going to be a while before they command my respect again. So I was honestly emotionally divorced. I've been waiting for a Gerrit Cole injury for like 2 years, because that's what happens when people sign with the Yankees. And when it ended up not being an arm injury, that's wonderful. I hope he gets as much time off as he needs. There is no reason for him to rush back and make his next start, even though Andrew Heaney is probably going to be occupying the innings. Maybe it's a Severino, Herman, Michael King, Kluber sandwich. That might be cool. Luis Gil gets a start and Cortez is back on his regular turn. I don't know. Do whatever you can to keep Gerrit Cole healthy, because you need him to win the wild card game. The rotation has not been the problem. There are a lot of plug and play arms who are not named Andrew Heaney who can be helpful during this time, especially if Cole doesn't have to miss much time. But where was your panic meter? Did you immediately go to the worst case scenario or no?
No, I just knowing Gerrit Cole, I truly thought he was being responsible about it. And
he was pumping 100. I mean, yeah, so he was, you got to feel good about that.
Yeah, he was throwing 100. I know he was getting hit hard, but like, Sure, that's a reason for concern, but the Blue Jays have gotten him before and the Blue Jays are hot right now. So I didn't really think much into it. The manner in which he removed himself, he just quickly signaled and he had somebody come check on him and they walked off the field. I'm sure he just told them what was going on and that was that. I was more so just concerned because I'm more so concerned in general because I understand the rotation is not the problem and that's we can't afford a season ending injury, but we can afford a little break from Gerrit Cole there because there have been enough guys to step up. But I was just saying, this is in my head, this is the one guy who can give the 7-8 scoreless outing to prop the offense up in some capacity or only, you know, rely upon them to get one or two runs. And that could theoretically be a win. And then you remove that from the equation. And then it's harder for the Yankees to stop the bleeding. So that was just my worry that he's going to miss his next start, but I did not panic. He seemed like he was just like, dude, this is something's bothering me. I don't want to push it. Get me out of here. This game's unwrapped. DJ LeMahieu got eaten up by that grounder and it changed the whole game. That's a double play ball. If he comes up with it, I understand it's not an easy play. But yeah, you got to at least knock that down. And maybe it's runners on first and second. But yeah, thankfully, I wasn't too worried. The offense is still concerning me more than anything else.
So. I hate baseball. Baseball is just not good. Let's maybe can we dive into the past for a little bit? Like if we're doing a mini-sode and Derek Jeter's making the Hall of Fame, you know, officially today, he's going to give his speech. It's probably going to last a minute and a half, 3 minutes maximum, knowing Derek Jeter. Tino's going to speak for longer than Jeter. But, you know, God love him. A lot of people on Twitter having the time of their lives today who never watched Derek Jeter play baseball, who recently turned 14 and root for the Miami Marlins, twisting themselves into a knot as they discover Derek's baseball reference page or Fangraphs page and act like Ponce de Leon, like stumbling upon untrod territory, like looking back at their parents being like, has anyone ever seen this before? Yes, we know about Derek Jeter's defensive stats. We know his OPS pluses are not, you know, they're well above league average, but they're not exactly, you know, the 141. Hey, spoiler alert, Derek Jeter isn't Albert Pujols. It's like everybody who is a child who was born in 2008 appears to be discovering for the first time that Derek Jeter was not Barry Bonds. Derek Jeter was also not, you know, the best defensive player in MLB history. These are very interesting facts for children to learn. And I'm glad we have information available at our fingertips. But without the context of Derek Jeter's full career, this is no way to assess his contribution to Major League Baseball. The Yankees might win some of their 90s titles without him, but it is an entirely different era. Baseball is a story, beginning to end. You cannot tell the story of baseball without Derek Jeter's extremely meaningful contributions. He owns signature moment after signature moment. If you're not a fan of the Yankees, I understand why you wouldn't want to watch them again. I don't want to watch David Ortiz's home runs, but Derek Jeter is intrinsic to the fabric of the game from 1995 to roughly 2012. He deserves to be celebrated. He would be, and I'm going to go one more here. People say Jeter wouldn't be celebrated in the same manner if he played in Kansas City or Milwaukee. I'm going to go another level and say he would be much more celebrated if he had played in Kansas City or Milwaukee and was just as great. Do you see what they say about George Brett? Like he is the leader of an entire generation of fans for the entire Midwest. People think George Brett is unimpeachably a god. If Derek Jeter had played in one of these small cities and won 1 to 2 World Series surrounded by good teams in these tinier baseball towns, he would be the first 101% Hall of Famer. He suffers from being a Yankee because people have Yankee fatigue. That's my hottest take, and I'm putting that on you. Do you agree or disagree?
I agree with it. CC Sabathia played a half season with the Brewers, and he's still a legend there. Like
he's going to get a statue.
Yeah, Derek Jeter. I mean, it's hilarious because now all of a sudden, when people have definitive Hall of Fame cases, and it's someone you don't like, then we're going to dive into the contrarian statistics, and we're going to look at advanced defensive stats and how they weren't that great. And why that should knock him down a peg as one of the all-time greats. And that's the same people who will argue that, you know, oh, if you don't have enough championships, why do you deserve to be in the Hall of Fame? It's just every argument exists to satisfy the contrarians. The guy Jeter appeared in 158 fucking playoff games. That's an extra full MLB season. He hit .308 with an .838 OPS. Who have you seen that has done that? I don't understand what more needs to happen for you to be satisfied. He was largely a five tool player for most of his career. No, he didn't hit 40 home runs. No, like, yeah, he wasn't Barry Bonds, dude. Sorry, but he was a perennial MVP candidate. He was the captain of the New York Yankees during arguably one of the greatest stretches in franchise history. How does that not hold any weight with all the people talking about how hard it is to play in the spotlight in New York and how it is to kind of corral your team and deal with the media and deal with the criticism and the tough fan base? How does that not weigh into the equation, or how is that not one of the leading factors into your evaluation of somebody who's going to the Hall of Fame? I don't understand. And you want to talk about longevity, two decades in the league, almost 2,800 games played. Once again, I don't know what more you want. We're complaining about guys on a daily basis now who are, how many times have we complained about Aaron Judge and Giancarlo Stanton for missing games for soft tissue injuries? Derek Jeter, one of the most reliable players from an availability standpoint, from a leadership standpoint, and delivered with his play. I understand he was surrounded by other tremendous players that certainly helped him, but guess what? He still delivered. He still led the league in hits twice. He still came up with all the clutch hits. He won five World Series and five Silver Sluggers. Like, that defines you as being one of the greatest at your position of all time. So I do understand where you're coming from as a hater. You don't want to see other people that you don't like succeeding. You don't want to see fans of opposing fan bases enjoy their lives. But don't come up with nonsense arguments about why someone doesn't deserve to be enshrined or doesn't deserve the credit that they've earned over the course of two decades of a playing career. Most of you people arguing about it haven't done one half decade of anything successful. So shut up, please.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, more Jeter wrap up. Welcome back to the Yanks Go Yard podcast. Yeah, it's again, I just don't understand what the motivation is. Like, I'm sitting here. I despise David Ortiz, and he used steroids. And it bothers me that he's going to be waltzing into the Baseball Hall of Fame and you know, Alex Rodriguez is not. David Ortiz still out here searching for the real killer with his steroid tests, and that's great. But I can sit here and say he deserves to be in the Baseball Hall of Fame because what he means to the story of the game of baseball, Boston Red Sox, no World Series since 1918 until he arrived, 2004, 2007, 2013. He hit like 800 in the 2013 World Series. He was the singular driving force behind the 04 title for sure, and 07 and 13, he played a monstrous role. I think he was a World Series MVP in 13. And if Dustin Pedroia had played like three more years, I'd be here advocating for him for the Hall of Fame too. These are some of the greatest players I've watched in the biggest rivalry in baseball. If you are a Red Sox fan and you are earnestly tweeting about Derek Jeter's defensive shortcomings, then you are a lunatic. And you are also an example of why Red Sox fans, we need fewer platformed Red Sox fans. Deplatform Red Sox fans. They're everywhere. They're like in politics. Senator Chris Murphy from Connecticut today was retweeting guys saying Derek Jeter doesn't deserve to be in the Hall of Fame. And the guy was joking and like, very funny. But like, stop. You're a senator. Like, let's get Red Sox fans out of the Senate. We can't be doing this. And we certainly can't be doing this on Twitter. The Senate has more things to bother with. But I can acknowledge greatness. And by the way, you know, what's weird is that most of the people who are being these Jeter detractors, they don't seem to be Red Sox fans. They seem to just be baseball tweens who have grown up in an era where the Yankees don't even win titles anymore. And they still decide to degrade previous eras they didn't grow up with just because these current Yankees can't come through in the clutch and haven't gotten the breaks and haven't gotten the bounces. The previous generation must not have been as good as we were told either. Well, guess what? They were. They really were. They showed up and made something out of nothing in 1996, came back from a crazy deficit in Derek Jeter's rookie year. He was a huge part of Game 6 of the World Series. He was a huge part of that whole run and that whole season. Rookie of the year, unanimous, I believe. Actually, don't know that for sure.
I have it right here.
But then, 1998, the leader of an unkillable baseball team. 1999, another world champion, dispatched of the other team of the century in Atlanta. 2000. Spiraled, worst September ever. The Yanks are up 2-1 on the road. The Subway Series, who starts game four with a home run? None other than Derek Jeter. This team knew what it took to win. It was, you had to kill them 10 times in order to knock them out of the playoffs. It was like the Patriots for 20 years. It's like, you think you have Tom Brady at 28-3, you have to kill him 10 more times in order to get him to the end of that game and the final whistle. Derek Jeter was the same thing. And people always talk about how there were more people responsible on those Yankee championship teams than just Jeter, and we're overrating his legacy. Yes, Bernie Williams deserves all the credit in the world. Paul O'Neill, Tino Martinez, David Cohen, Andy Pettit, Mariano Rivera, Jorge Posada. Absolutely, all these people deserve credit. You know what's crazy? Mariano Rivera, the closer, is the only other Hall of Famer, and nobody else from that roster is getting in. Yeah. I think Bernie deserves to be in, but he's not getting in. Posada not coming close. Pettit not coming close. So doesn't that imbue Jeter with more greatness? People are always arguing about how many more contributors there were on that roster. That team was greater than the sum of its parts, in large part because of the leadership of Derek Jeter, as ridiculous as that sounds. All of these things that that feel like detracting statements, all they do is strengthen his case for me. I don't know what your favorite Jeter moment is. It's hard to lay it out because there are so many, and they're all sort of, you know, it going along with that fact that they're also intrinsic, and it's like a, you know, a great fabric woven together, these Yankee championships. I think the flip play is sort of second to none. Jeremy Giambi slides, we might not be having that discussion, but that's the thing. Derek Jeter on one side, the baseball acumen to get a crazy overthrow, range somewhere he's not supposed to be, and make a behind-the-back flip in order to get the out at home plate. On the other side is a baseball team that's ostensibly equal in talent to the Yankees, and Jeremy Giambi doesn't have any of the baseball know-how to even think to slide, which is the most basic bit of baseball. Like, if you want to talk about, like, having it versus not having it, Derek Jeter has the wherewithal to be out of position to make a behind-the-back play, and the guy on the other end doesn't even have the wherewithal to get on the ground. And that's the difference. The teams Derek Jeter was facing didn't have an ounce of his baseball knowledge, and he exploited it in big moments time and time again. And truly, it does feel like that, you know, Jeter Brady should be spoken of more. You really did have to kill these Yankees 100 times to get them out. It's like a cockroach you could cut in half and the back half skitters away. They were an awesome team that you're not going to understand if you're 15 years old and reading advanced stats. And that's just how it is. What's your moment? Do you have one?
Ooh, well, by the way, he did win Rookie of the Year that way that year unanimously.
And he wasn't even the starter, entering spring training. It was supposed to be Tony Fernandez. Rest in peace. But that's baseball's weird. Some of the years when you don't expect to be anything, you're everything. Jeter wasn't supposed to be the starter on March 5th or whatnot. He took the job and ran with it. Yankees have been really reticent to do that in recent years, give overperforming rookies a chance to shine. And maybe they should learn something from themselves because, you know, it works sometimes.
Yeah. My favorite Jeter moment, probably not. I had been thinking about this, but probably not really on anybody's radar. His 3000th hit, man, home run. Like
I was there.
Yeah. That embodies Derek Jeter to me. It's like, here's the moment. Here's the opportunity to make the moment even greater and even more of a storybook type deal. And he does it. He did it to end his career with the walk-off hit against the Orioles. Don't care if the pitcher grooved the fastball in there. It still happened, but 3000th hit was a home run. Absolutely amazing. But kind of a runner up for me is because I've just always appreciated Derek Jeter taking the field on a nightly basis because I knew what we were getting out of him. And you knew, like I said, the leadership qualities, the reliability, the dependability. I was at the 1999 World Series when they closed it out against the Braves at Yankee Stadium. And just watching him celebrate. I know he didn't have the greatest series in that World Series. The next one against the Mets was when he won MVP. But yeah, I mean, he still hit .353 against the Braves. He didn't produce a whole lot of runs, only one RBI and four runs scored, but just watching him celebrate at the end of it with his teammates, that was just like, that just defined him for me. Just he's through and through a team guy, and managed to rise to the occasion at every single, if he wasn't producing runs, he was hitting for average. He was getting on base. He was stealing bases. He stole three in that World Series. So just watching all the confetti fall, watching him celebrate, really meant a lot for me as a 9-year-old. It was a moment of idolization for me. But to take the cake, I mean, I loved his 3000th hit. It truly kind of set the tone for the end of his career and how things were kind of going to transpire for him and how he would be remembered. And that's how I remember him, always making the moment greater than it really should have been.
I was at that 3000 hit game. I can't believe I forgot that to mention that. It was incredible. Awesome. I had tickets for the day before it got rained out. I was on the Metro North train with my parents, learned of the rain out, Bought tickets for the next day on the train. I think there was like rain in the forecast the next day too, or I don't know. We immediately cashed them in, turned around, rode the train back, drove in the next day. Incredible game. And it doesn't get mentioned enough. He obviously went three. He needed two hits that day. Got a hit his first appearance and then homered in a second. Of course he did. And then broke it. Yankees had a 4-3 lead late in that game, blew the save. In an echoing what would eventually happen in that 2014 game where David Robertson blew a crazy save just so Jeter could walk it off. 4-4 game, the eighth, he broke the tie again. I think he went 5-for-5. Just an incredible baseball player up until the moment when his ankle snapped in the 2012 playoffs, which signaled the end of the era because he came back the next year, wasn't the same, you know, was very much a 40-plus-year-old man by the time he retired. But right up until 2012, he was incredible, which is sort of an underrated part of his legacy too, because you remember the regressing Jeter. You remember he couldn't stay on the field in 2013 and in 2014, the endless farewell tour, and the Angels gave him a surfboard. And that's when he started to jump the shark, and it was like, all right, he can't play anymore. Everybody who's saying that is right. But up until 2012, he was a valuable – he had an unbelievable 2012 season.
Yeah.
Should have won the 2006 MVP.
Yep.
Justin Morneau took it from him. Just a great baseball player. Every girl in my class loved Derek Jeter, third and fourth grade. I remember being the contrarian and just trying to like other people because everybody liked Derek Jeter. But there's nothing not to like about Derek Jeter. And – it was a bygone era where the Yankees competed every day and you knew you couldn't get rid of them, and they did punt games in the sixth inning, and it's just a different era to watch baseball in, and I miss it very much. And congratulations, Derek, on your well-deserved induction. Congratulations to Larry Walker, Ted Simmons, and Marvin Miller too. Hell of a year. Very excited to watch the ceremony. That is it for this minisode. Getting off my soapbox, I'm Adam Weinerb. You can find me on Twitter at Adam Weinerb. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Drop us a 5-star review along with a mailbag question. We'll be more than happy to answer it. Thomas Carinante, where can the people find you?
I'm at Tommy's_takes. You can also find us at YanksGoYard.com. Plenty of content there for you. You can also talk to us on the official Yanks Go Yard Twitter account at YanksGoYardFS, where I was ripped last night for saying Albert Abreu isn't that good. I don't know. I just don't know at this point what take is going to make someone happy. I really don't
understand. Spoiler alert to everybody who listened to the end of the podcast. Now you get to know whose tweet you hated.
Yeah. Well, we should do mean tweets for all the shit that we tweet that everybody hates. And we'll just read people trashing us for just like basic takes.
To God, this is the worst Yankee account on Twitter. You guys are stands for the, everybody should be a Derek Jeter stan instead of an Albert Abreu stan and his 5.71 FIP over 20 innings of baseball. Got us out of a couple of jams in Chicago. That was great. I loved that. Still not that good.
Yep. And I did mention before that Derek Jeter was the captain during the Yankees championship runs. He obviously was not. It was afterward, but the Yankees run set the tone for him to become the captain. Just wanted to clarify that. Love you, Jeets. Congratulations, buddy.
Congratulations to our close personal friend. We'll see you on Friday. Let's get a win or two. How about it?